Hey, welcome to another great episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I, of course, am your host, Brian J. Rowan, joined by the crazy hooligans who are always sagging along with me, Nick Newman, associate editor for the Film Stage.
Hello.
And Danny King, writer for the Film Stage.
Howdy.
Anyone just joining us for the first time, thanks for coming along. Let me tell you a little bit about the show. We're going to have a brief discussion to start off with related to recent news in the movie world. This week we'll be talking about Sight and Sounds. What is annual but for decades? Is there a word for that?
Decennial.
Decennial list of the 50 best films of all time. So we're going to talk about that real quick and how we feel about top 10 lists of such things in general. Then we're going to go into our main review, which will be of the movie Clown, spelled with a K. And then we'll give you our best bets for the coming week, and that'll be it from us. So once again, thanks for joining us. If you'd like, you can subscribe on iTunes, and if you do, make sure you rate us and give us a comment. And if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to give to us directly, you can do that at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So now that we've just blitzed our way through all of that housekeeping, we can get into our discussion topic for this week. As you all may know, the British film magazine Sight and Sound released its annual 50 Greatest Films of All Time. It's kind of a poll.
Decennial.
Decennial list of the 50 greatest films of all time. They do this by polling a number of film historians, critics, essayists, and whatnot, and then using that to extrapolate. The big news this year was that for the first time in, I believe, 50 years, Citizen Kane was not at the top. It was supplanted by Vertigo by Alfred Hitchcock. So, big news there. We wanted to just very quickly give our thoughts on this list and other movie lists in general, whether or not you agree with these lists, or whether or not you even really think that lists like this are constructive or necessary in the study of film. So, Nick, you were the one who kind of gave us this as a thing to go off of. So why don't you start us off?
What would you like me to say? What do you want me to jump off with?
I don't know. What do you think about Vertigo taking over? Do you feel like there's anything that can be taken from this list in terms of just, I don't know, what seems important to people in film? And do you think that lists like this are good for film or bad for film? Because a lot of people have said that this list is very stodgy, if that's the correct word.
Yeah.
It should be, because they're using it, but I mean, just the idea of, you know, all these old films, there's not a lot of new films. Obviously there's not a lot of women on this list. There's only one female director. So do you think things like this that kind of exalt the previous best are really worth it? Or should we be trying to think of a better way to kind of create a master list of necessary viewing?
Well, films are subjective. I mean, anybody who listens to that show knows that we can disagree and have our arguments and our discussions, but at the end of the day, it's just how we feel. And I think that this list, while certainly a comprehensive and very well-organized collection of classic films, is ultimately the selected opinions of about, 800-something. You look at this selection. I mean, is Vertigo better than Citizen Kane? I don't know. I wouldn't say so. I don't think Vertigo is the best film of all time. I don't think it's the best movie Alfred Hitchcock made with Jimmy Stewart. But it's very good. You know, it's no slouch of a motion picture. But was that a titter?
That was funny. No slouch of a motion picture.
It doesn't rest on its laurels.
Yes. But yeah, I would say I prefer at least five films in the top 10 to Vertigo. But ultimately, who cares? It's just a selection of movies that have been deemed great, and if one comes out on top over the other, that doesn't mean the other is inferior. The Godfather is number 21, or it's tied for number 21 with Contempt and La Ventura, but it's still great. Maybe there are several films that are considered by many to be better, but maybe I prefer The Godfather to Battleship Potemkin. Battleship Potemkin is even my favorite Sergei Eisenstein film. You see, It's all in the air. It's all a matter of opinion and happenstance. It's all about what you like.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's kind of weird how it seems like the only reason people look forward to this list coming out is so that they can argue about it.
It's fun.
It is. It's an interesting thing. But me personally, I didn't read the list for the first 2 days it was out. And friends of mine and other colleagues kept asking, have you read it yet? And I was like, no, because why do I care? Because odds are I'm not going to agree with anything on it. Not because I don't think these films are great, but just because I don't think of things in terms of numerical placement on a list of any kind. It seems impossible, given the subjective nature of film. Like, I do give a different answer every day for my favorite film of all time, depending on the mood I'm in. You know, that's kind of what art is. But Danny, what did you think when you read this, and what do you think it kind of does for film as a whole, this idea of placing these things into a list like this?
Well, I think kind of the goal behind this list is, like, the phrase you used is kind of like a master list of, like, essential viewing. And I think it fills that goal well. I mean, I don't think you could go through many films on the list and be like, that doesn't deserve to be canonized or whatnot. But like we've said, there's a limit to how much practical use you want to get from the list. Because to me, like, the extent of how I'm going to let the list affect, like, me is, like, I'm just going to want to watch everything on it. I'm not going to want to, like, reorder them or, like, try and, like, set up my own chart to, like, make a better one. Because, as we've been saying, it's all subjective, and to try and translate that into a numerical system is never going to be foolproof. But one of the things I do like about this list and the idea of Vertigo and Citizen Kane being at the top is that, to me, those are two movies that are, they're like, the word you used was stodgy. They're stodgy in the sense that they're really, like, academic movies in terms of you could watch them with, like, a film critic's mindset and just find, like, a million things to analyze and talk about.
Oh, but they're also, God.
What?
Oh, that sounds awful. Right?
What do you?
Does it? I would enjoy that.
I'm joking.
I wasn't sure. For a second, I thought you were taking it very literally.
Who do you think I am?
You are Nick Newman. You are an enigma wrapped in a question, into a tortilla shell. I don't know.
Ooh.
I just
smeared on a Bernard Herrmann score.
I think that is one of the things, though. People look at these films and they're like, oh, sure, they're the best, but, you know... I think people have a hard time grasping the fact that this is a list chosen by critics, so it is going to tend more towards films that are like that.
You know, yeah,
you're not going to get The Hangover on a list like this. It's not populist enough, I think, is sometimes what people worry about.
And that is a good thing.
I think that it's a good thing as well, because these are, you know, as much as these films get made fun of for being old, like, these are films that in their time were insanely challenging.
Yeah, and they were completely radical, too.
Yeah.
I don't think this list is stodgy in the slightest. I think that's a ridiculous claim. How is Rules of the Game stodgy? That movie's funny as hell. Have you seen it? It's a comedy, basically.
Yeah.
And it gives you a lot to think about and there's a lot to analyze, but it's a really entertaining film. Vertigo and...
Breathless is entertaining as hell.
Sure. Eight and a Half?
Yeah.
Eight and a Half's a great time. I feel like... You know, in discussion, we've started to facilitate rubishness, which, hey, maybe that sounds rude, but screw it. I'm going to be rude when I talk about this list. Oh, so God. When somebody says, in the mood for love, please, how do you not roll your eyes at that? I mean, I haven't heard anybody argue against this list and try to sound like they're an intelligent discusser. I just use the word discusser next to intelligent of cinema. I really think this is a terrific list, and above all else, it also makes me want to see what I'm missing from this selection, and I don't know how that's not a great thing. I think it's only encouraging discussion of films as art, and it's getting more people to see more masterworks. That in and of itself completely justifies this list's existence.
I agree with that. To the point that we don't start getting really, really hung up on, like, what did and didn't make it. Like, yeah. You were saying, you know, you might not like Vertigo as much as other Alfred Hitchcock films. but we can still admit that it's a pretty great movie.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have a tendency to look at something like this, think that this is gospel, the only 50 films worthy of being seen, and they kind of take offense to that. So I feel like as long as we can approach it from that kind of standpoint where it's like, these are great films, obviously there are other ones, but you know, these are just something that you should see. And looking through it, I was actually surprised at how many I had seen that I wasn't even aware other people had seen. Within the top 20, for instance, Mirror, I didn't think anyone else in the world had seen that. It just is not one of those films that gets brought up a lot. So seeing something like that up there...
It was in the director's top 10, too. It was number 9.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Awesome. Excellent. But yeah, things like that. I mean, like, from a level standpoint of just discussion and, you know, finding things that might be more in your wheelhouse of interest, I think it's great. I think it's when we get down to that sort of I have to win mentality that it could get a little destructive.
Well, again, just the fact that we're talking about Andrei Tarkovsky's The Mirror right now, isn't that enough, really?
I mean, for me, yeah.
Yeah, that's not my favorite Tarkovsky movie. It's not my favorite of his that's on this list. But it's a serious work of art. And it's being brought into the... I don't want to say the discussion because I hate using that term as a general thing. But people are talking about it more than they have... Well, I should say, if you go on Twitter, for example, where the order of the day is typically something that came out 3 days ago, the fact that this is coming up now, I think is beautiful, and I love it. I wish it was always like that. I wish there was always this debate and this discussion and this inspiration to seek out things on here that you have not seen. Because you look at every one of these movies, and they're essential. They're important classics. I don't think it's so much the order that they're put in, just so long as they're recognized as being seminal.
Very well put. Though I am curious now, what is your favorite Tarkovsky on there?
Stalker.
No. Okay. As long as it's not Andrei Rublev.
You don't like Andrei Rublev?
I like it. It's not better than Mirror.
I mean, you're not going to watch it every day.
No. I don't even know if that's possible.
No.
You might start dipping into the next day if you do that.
You would have to sacrifice a lot of a lot of normal things.
Sadly.
On this list, how many movies from it have we not seen? My number is 11.
So yeah, out of the top 50, I have not seen 20, which I'm ashamed to say. And Danny, what about yourself?
I haven't seen 12.
Yes. So I'm the big loser on this thing. But hey, that gives me something to do for the rest of my summer.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, that's the thing. Now you suddenly you're thinking, hey, maybe I should see, you know, Saint and Tango, for example. Which I do want to see, but the DVD from Amazon is like $45, and I'm like,
yeah, it's not necessary.
I'll get around to it.
I'll just watch Mulholland Drive again. Yeah, so that's our thoughts on this list. If you have any thoughts of your own, once again, you can email them to podcast@filmstage.com. So yeah, now that we're done talking about that, we can move on to our review of the Danish film comedy Clown by Mikael Norgaard. But yeah, so Clown, I would say it's kind of like a road comedy buddy movie, coming of age story for people of all ages. Basic outline of this film: Frank finds out that his girlfriend is pregnant. She is not sure she wants to keep the baby because she doesn't think he has father potential. So to try to prove to her that he does have father potential, this is a phrase that gets tossed around a lot. He kidnaps her nephew Bo to go on a debaucherous road trip with their friend Casper. I feel like debaucherous road trip is the most academic way to put it, the way that Casper puts it. So yeah, Clown. What did we think of this film? Danny, why don't you kick us off here by giving us your analysis of this film?
It was funny.
All right.
Second sound entry from Danny King. 10 years, number 7. It's funny.
it had quite the consistency of humor that I enjoy. It's fun.
Yeah.
All right. I will say, I mean, like, this movie is a little difficult to talk about just because it is a very pure film. I mean, it's kind of like it's pure in a way that, like, it doesn't have a lot of layers.
Oh, I thought because,
like, no, not
this movie is so filthy.
Not in terms of morality ethics. No, this film has some pretty crazy things that go on. We can get into them in spoilers, because I feel like there are certain moments in this film that I want to bring up and talk about. But I mean, in a general way, yeah, you say that a film like this is funny and it's consistently funny. Like, that's about as good as you can get with it. I found a lot of the humor, it's very dry in some places, and then it swings wildly to the more shocking, gross-tastic kind of humor that you might be more used to. Nick, what did you think of Clown?
Oh, I thought it was a laugh riot. I was laughing from top to bottom.
From top to bottom?
Yeah.
From the top of the movie to the bottom of the movie? Or, like, your whole body was shaking?
I was shaking.
Okay.
No, but in all seriousness, I don't know what else to add other than what Danny said. It's really funny. But no, I do think that it's a pretty nice look at male friendship and sort of how awful it can be and how much personalities can clash to kind of screw everything up. It's not a deep film, but I do think that what it kind of zeroes in on, it manages to focus on and exploit very well. And, you know, as someone who can appreciate uncomfortable humor when it's done well, this movie is kind of a gold mine a lot of the time.
Yes,
because there
is.
Are just moments in this movie throughout where my whole body was just cringing. My whole body was just a big piece of cringe, you know? Yeah. I'm just stiffed up. I'm sure you all know.
I could guess at least two of the instances in which that was a problem.
Yes, the movie is...
It does not shy away from putting people in some pretty awful situations.
Yeah, and what I love is that the movie doesn't apologize for it either.
No,
it doesn't try to... I feel like, because as you might know, there's an American remake being developed, and even though it's Todd Phillips and Danny McBride, I do feel like it cannot be on this same level as this Danish version, right. In terms of the... uncompromising nature. They're gonna have to cut back on some stuff because it's a movie filled with hand over mouth moments, you might say.
Yeah.
And for that alone, I have to tip my hat. But it's also just it's a short movie, so I guess it's easier for it to do this. But it's consistently entertaining from beginning to end.
Right. And it does not drag.
No, it doesn't. And I had a very good time.
Yeah, I mean, my one kind of, you know, caveat would be if you are the type of person who gets very easily embarrassed for people in movies, like if you have real trouble handling a situation that you know is very awkward, like this movie is so full with them. It's ridiculous the amount of stuff that gets brought in, I guess. And it's not a movie where you're left with the impression of what may have happened. This movie does not once in its entire run shy from showing you full on the things that have occurred. There is nowhere to hide in this movie. And I loved it. It was, you know, because like I said, it's short. It's hilarious the whole way through. And I did like the the heart that it kind of wore on its sleeve. This idea of a man who... never really thought about being a father, but believes he's capable of it and wants to prove it so badly that he's willing to do some really awful, terrible things and just having to find himself. I also like the fact that the ridiculous shit that he does actually carries with it a little bit of weight. You know, they don't find a way to skirt over it. Like, yeah, not a lot of good ways to talk about comedy without just, you know, getting into some of the things that happen. So I think we can all say that if Clown is in your town, you should go see it, correct?
Yeah, I would, but we watched this on a screener online, and I feel like maybe Isn't it on VOD? I feel like the movie wouldn't lose anything if it's not seen in a theater.
I was going to say, I mean, I watched it alone because I had never seen it, and I wasn't about, I'm on vacation with my family at the moment.
Oh, God.
And I was not going to watch this with my family. Not a chance in hell. So I feel like if you watch it with other people, I feel like the, you know, comedies play better to a crowd, I feel. I would say get some friends who enjoy some crazy balls-to-the-wall humor, and and you should check this movie out. But yeah, getting into spoilers for this film, the one thing I did want to ask was, if you are Frank's girlfriend, and you find out that after bringing her nephew on this insane, insane road trip that results in her nephew almost drowning, if the grand romantic gesture of stealing a toy truck from a liquor company at gunpoint would be enough to make you realize that he does have father potential. Like, does that sync with people? I don't know about that. That was a jump that maybe was a little too far for me.
I mean, the whole film, just the idea that he would, I suppose,
think
after
it's a good idea in the first place.
I suppose after he jerked off on his future mother-in-law's face, maybe he felt the need to prove himself a little more. So, but still, the idea of taking this boy on tour de pussy, felt ill. Yeah, I guess if people don't care about spoilers and are still listening, that's the name of the trip him and his friends are decide to go on. After a certain point, I just accepted that anything could happen in this movie, and right. Even though he almost drowned.
I would have to say that
he almost drowned outside the home of the woman that they basically had a three-way sex with.
The most awkward three-way ever.
And like, it was, oh, I actually, I started eating during that scene.
Why would you do that?
Because that's when dinner was ready.
The pancakes made you hungry?
Yeah, and worst use of a finger in a movie this year.
Yeah, I have to really give it up to the actors in this film, because I don't know anyone who could.
Or should I say best use?
Possibly best use, actually. But Frank, I mean, I'm saying Frank because the actor's name is actually Frank. Frank in this film, like, the actor who plays him, I've never seen someone, I'm trying to think of a vaguely clinical or academic way to put this, because I feel like we should have some level of professionalism, but it's impossible. Like, the scene where he just kind of kneels on the bed and, like, pulls the sheets down and very, like, very methodically and meaningfully, like, and then when he's done, he just puts the sheets back up and turns over and goes to sleep. Like, what? I was trying to imagine the direction of that scene, like the director behind the scenes giving him some kind of like guidelines for that scene. And just like everything about the way he played that was comedic genius. So hats off, Frank. Good work, man. And then just the fact that the mother-in-law had an eye patch on for the rest of the movie.
Just that whole scene. Oh, God. Because you just, the second you see the wife silhouette in the doorway,
oh my
you
God.
Just know it. It
I was just like, oh, God, who's in that bed?
Yeah.
I guess we should.
And also the fact that maybe, again, you talk about an American remake having to tone it down. The fact that they show on her face.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Disposal.
That was nuts. Another one of my favorite scenes in this film, and I think a piece of this film that kind of gives you the tone, like, because a lot of American movies will be gross or irreverent almost for the just for the sake of it, but a lot of the nutso stuff that happens in this movie comes from character, which I feel like in our rush to emphatically talk about how hilarious this movie is something we may have skipped over. Like I said, this movie has heart. This movie does have characters that act in a way that befits them, and the best moment of character for Frank is when he realizes that the house is being robbed, sneaks downstairs, and after failing to wake Beau, just kind of leaves the house. just like straight up just runs away. And holy crap, like ridiculous. This movie is filled with moments like that, and they're all incredible. But yeah, also, you know, talking about, you know, looking at relationships between friends. I mean, who hasn't been in a situation where you go to a book club and realize that you didn't read the book?
Yeah. I feel like that's sort of a kind of an all-encompassing metaphor for much of life.
Yes, especially Frank's life.
What exactly were the mechanics of that, like, insult they would do?
Oh, the schnozzel?
Yeah. Do you know, like, exactly what they did? I couldn't tell.
I was trying to figure it out. I kind
of thought they flicked them on the bridge of their nose, but
yeah.
It looked like they kind of grabbed it a little bit, too.
Yeah, he was, like, bleeding. He was like,
yeah, the guy just straight up, like, tried to break his nose.
Yeah.
Very, very odd.
I also admire the film for how much it respects stupidity, in a certain sense. You talk about, you know, they go, you call this a road comedy, but they really go like 10 miles or so.
I was about to say like 10 miles.
Because the boy, you know, they go about 4 miles to the woman's house, and that's where Beau drowns too, and the hospital is right nearby. And that just, I don't know why, that just cracked me up, the idea that these people on this quote-unquote tour have just kind of gone that length.
Yeah, I mean, it, for the epic scope that they try to give it, it really is quite the small journey. I also like the fact that the reason that they're going canoeing is because the guy found out that the one thing his wife does not want to do is canoeing. And that guy is just kind of a dick to everyone, really. And yeah, I mean, it's, comedies are very difficult to talk about in a critical way.
I think it's the first comedy we've really, oh no, that was The Dictator.
Oh God, yeah. That was awful though. The thing about The Dictator was we could talk about its flaws.
Right.
Which is a lot easier than, I mean, I don't want to give away every joke in this film, but I mean, this is another reason I'd say to watch it with friends. Because as you can tell from us talking, like half the fun is just kind of looking back and saying, holy crap, did they really do that?
Yeah.
Particularly a photo slideshow at the end of the film.
Jesus.
You know, the thing about, that says a lot about this movie, how the second he starts a photo slideshow, because you know there's only 2 minutes left in the movie, you know exactly what's going to happen. You just don't know specifically what's going to happen. Let me put it that way.
Precisely.
And it's part of the uncomfortable comedy because I got as tense as I do when I watch, you know, to go back to this film, like Vertigo, for example, because I mean, I was literally like clenching my fists in fear because you know that it's just going to end so horribly. And then it actually ends worse than you're expecting.
You think, yeah.
Because you don't think they're going to show
the things.
Those specific photos, right. Yes. But this movie, again, a tip of the cap. It's not afraid to just say, screw it, this is what we're going to...
Well done, sir.
We're going to give you.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, the other thing is, it's one of those moments, and there are many, many moments like this, where you are just sitting there, like, yelling at the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I can tell what's going on, and I've been there through all this, then this friggin' character should be able to realize what a terrible, stupid mistake he's making.
Yeah.
And that type of thing, if it's done well... It really enhances the film because it's not like it's just happening because it needs to make it the event occur. But you can just tell that this is a character who ostensibly has learned absolutely nothing. And comedy like that comes from characters and actually, you know, you can feel the relationships is a lot better than just, you know, some idiot getting whacked in the balls over and over again. Yeah. So
you do get a bit of that here, though.
You do. You get a little bit of everything here. I can't think of a style of comedy that isn't plumbed in some way in this film.
I keep thinking about the scene where he loses Bo at the fair and he goes on the rock stage.
Yeah.
He's in his underwear. Just screaming, Bo!
Bo! Bo! Oh, my God.
It was gold.
Good movie. Yeah, so any final thoughts on this before we we wrap it up. Very short discussion, but again, like I said, it's a short movie. And once you get past the idea that it's awesome, there's really not much more to say. All right, excellent. So we can all agree you should check out Clown on VOD and I believe coming to a few select theaters in limited release. See it with friends. Dear God, don't see it with your family. Unless you have a very understanding, permissive family.
If you have a cool family.
Yeah, if you have an awesome family.
Yeah.
But yeah, so moving beyond that, we can get into our selections for next week. Coming to DVD via DVD release dates, we have The Lorax, Blue Like Jazz, Belle Ami.
It just gets better and better.
Yes, it does. And that's about it, really. As far as
some other stuff.
What have you got?
Marley from Kevin McDonald, which I'm a little curious about. I'm not a huge Bob Marley fan, but, you know, it's supposed to be a good documentary. We gave it a good review.
Oh, excellent.
The Blues Brothers 2000 is coming on Blu-ray. That movie is a piece of shit.
I was about to say, no one wants to see that movie. Why would you even bring that up?
I don't know.
You were a bad person.
It's very sad. Killing Bono, which I saw like almost a year ago. That movie it's kind of fun. It's lightweight, but I'm not even a U2 fan, and I kind of enjoyed it. So I would I'm gonna throw a little thing out there for that. If you can check that out, go rent it.
All right, excellent, Danny.
And Shark Week from Asylum.
Shark Week. Is it actually Shark Week though?
It's an Asylum movie.
I know, but I'm saying like in general, isn't it Shark Week for the Discovery Channel?
Yeah, it should be about that.
Excellent.
Time.
Yeah, because I think it's usually the second week in August. So it's not, if it's not this week, it's the next week. And everyone should check out Shark Week, because Shark Week is awesome. Random plug for Shark Week. Danny, anything coming out on DVD catch your eye?
Well, I haven't seen any of those. I want to see Marley. And, you know, if you like orange furry things, I'm sure The Lorax will fit the bill.
Okay.
Give it a look.
Give it a look. I do not like orange furry things, so I shall not be seeing The Lorax. I guess I could see Marley, even though I really dislike Bob Marley.
No.
I'm not a fan. I don't know. Maybe I just had too many Bob Marley friends when I was growing up. It's one of those things you get burned out on pretty quickly if it's not your deal in the first place.
Sure. I feel like Bob Marley friends is just, you know, people who smoke a lot of pot.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a non-incriminating way to say that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the police don't mind now.
Probably. Statute of limitations. Coming exactly. To theaters, August 10th, we have The Bourne Legacy, starring Jeremy Renner, Rachel Weisz, Edward Norton, directed by Tony Gilroy, who did Michael Clayton and Duplicity, which was actually a very good movie that not a lot of people saw.
Mm.
We also have The Campaign, which is Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis, Hope Springs, which is Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones, Steve Carell, 2 Days in New York, which is Julie Delpy, Chris Rock, Red Hook Summer, directed by Spike Lee, and that's about it. So, gentlemen, do any of these movies ring your bell, or are we just staying home again next weekend?
Well, I said this off the air, but it might as well be said while recording. I have seen Red Hook Summer, but considering I'll be sitting down with Spike Lee tomorrow, maybe I should save my thoughts on Red Hook Summer for next week.
All right.
Let's just leave it at that.
Danny, any of these in particular, something you think you'd want to see?
So I watched 2 Days in Paris the other day on Netflix Instant, and that was really good. 2 Days in New York is the sequel. Julie Delpy is a really good actress and an interesting filmmaker, so that should be good.
All right, excellent. And yeah, I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to see The Bourne Legacy. I'm a big fan of Jeremy Renner.
You said that like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, no one else had said it. That's like the big movie, and everyone seemed to be tacitly avoiding it. So.
Oh, I just, when we did our 3 most anticipated this summer, that was on my list.
I don't even remember what my list was.
Yeah. I don't know why I remember that, but I think it'll be good.
Well, I mean, if it was your most anticipated, I should think that you'd remember.
It was number 3.
I think my problem is that we've already hit mine, except for Lawless.
I'm seeing that on Tuesday.
You son of a bitch.
Nah.
Again, I am the host of this damn show. Why am I not seeing these things? But yeah, I mean, I want to see that. I have no interest in basically anything else. Especially, like, if I had to choose one specifically not to watch, I think I would choose The Campaign.
Ooh.
Like, maybe we should start doing that. We should start having, if you had to pick one film this week that you would never be allowed to watch, which would you be the most okay losing?
Yeah.
We won't do that just yet, though. I don't want to put anyone on the spot. But I just am not a fan of most of everything that those two actors are doing anymore. I might change my tune for the second Anchorman, but I'm worried that going back to that well will be bad for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what's coming to theaters and DVD. So why don't we give our random recommendations, and then we can sign off and leave you fine people to the rest of your week. So Nick, why don't you give us your random recommendation for the week?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ran, which is a 1985 movie from Akira Kurosawa. We all know that name. And this is usually, well, universally considered to be his final epic. It's really quite an accomplishment. It's basically the story of King Lear, but set in feudal Japan. And it's very fascinating to see how he takes this classic Shakespearean mold and sort of twists it around to match his own ideas and what he is fascinated with as a storyteller. And it's absolutely beautiful, too, and very thrilling. It's 160 minutes, but it goes by so quick. Check it out.
Yeah, I've heard great things about that.
I don't know why I had not seen it, because I love Kurosawa, but it was just missing from my list. But now it is there.
Now you've struck it off. You can get back to the top 50.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, what about yourself? What's something you watched this week that you think people should check out?
I'm going to go with Hoop Dreams. That's another long one. It's like nearly 3 hours. It's from Steve James, who also made The Interrupters last year, which is another really good doc. And it's about two kids from Chicago, both trying to make the MBA. And it's just kind of this really intimate, honest portrait of not only their athletic and academic struggles, but also their families, their parents, and the relationship to the city. It's really, really good movie.
I've not seen that one.
I think it's on Instant for like another day. Yeah, and since it's 3 hours, it's probably not the best timing, but
yeah, should have gotten that one a little earlier. Nick, have you seen this film?
You know, I never have. I always forget about it, to be honest. It's one of those, you know how there are essential movies that you know you have to see and it eats away at you because you're like, why haven't I seen this?
And then you tell lies to people who ask because you don't want to seem lame. And then slowly the lies build greater and greater and it eats at you.
I'm not really a fan of lying about that. I'm just like, you know, I haven't seen it. So no, I have not seen Hoop Dreams. I will before my death. So
don't go making promises you can't keep.
Well, I don't know when I will, but at some point, I promise.
All right. Well, I'm gonna give us a short film to balance out. It's still in theaters, but it's been out for a while, and I don't know how much longer it's gonna be there. In limited release, Safety Not Guaranteed. Yeah, I went and saw it. I think it was a Wednesday, and yeah, it's a fun little movie. It's based on that. What was it? It was like it's an advertisement that was in a paper looking for a partner for time travel, said Safety Not Guaranteed, you know, only done this once before. And so this movie kind of takes that and runs with it and builds a couple of pretty affecting love stories and just a meditation on relationships and where we fit into the world and, you know, the way that we cling to the past and hope for the future. And, you know, it's like an hour and a half long. Some pretty good character actors in it getting a chance to shine. And yeah, I enjoyed it. So you all should check it out. Have either of you seen this film?
No. I have. Yeah. I liked it. What surprised me was that my favorite stuff in the movie was actually, I don't know the actor's name, but it's like his story about meeting up with his old flame.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
and it's like my favorite as well.
Yeah, because you just go in expecting to like want to love all the Mark Duplass stuff and Aubrey Plaza, but that was kind of my favorite stuff in the movie.
Yeah, which is not to take away from the stuff with Mark Duplass and Aubrey Plaza. That was great as well.
Is Mark Duplass wearing his sourpuss face throughout the movie?
It's probably like his most distinct character. Like it's not like the everyman kind of shaggy.
Well, he always looks like someone just told him bad news in a public setting, but he can't express his upset feelings about it because it would look bad. So he's just kind of like if he was at a party and someone told him that his cat died, like that is what Mark Duplass looks like most of the time.
Do you watch him in The League?
No.
Oh, okay, that's a really fun show, which is also something I've been watching, so...
Just every picture of him, I'm just thinking, lighten up, man, you're successful.
Well, what? His IMDb picture, he's smiling.
Sure.
I don't know about that. Yeah. But no, I know what you're talking about. Jake M. Johnson is the character of Jeff, who's really great. He's also in New Girl, which is a show that I rarely tell people I like because I don't want to have to explain myself. And he's a really good actor in that as well. But yeah, Safety Not Guaranteed. Like I said, it's in limited release. You should check it out if you can. And if not, I will make sure to alert you when it comes on DVD. But yeah, that brings us to our vaguely abbreviated episode of the Film Stage Show. Not much else to say. So gentlemen, why don't we tell the people where they can find us, and then we can sign off.
Filmstage.com, twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
Danny?
Filmstage.com, personal blog, thekingbulletin.com, and twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And you can find me on filmstage.com as well as dearfilm.net, my personal blog. And you can find me on twitter.com/BrianJRowan, Brian with an I. So thanks for coming by, and join us next week when we talk about The Bourne Legacy. And online at BrianJRowan. Oh, shoot. And on Twitter at BrianJRowan. Brian with an I.
And this week we'll all be on Tour de Pussy together.
Yes, we will. Because, you know, I can't even... I just thinking about that movie and the way that that whole thing ends up, like, it saps any jokes I could make for me, because now I just want to start laughing about the fact that he had sex with the high school teacher. Like...
Oh no, he was raped by the high school.
Yeah, that's what he claims anyway. Oh,
didn't you
God.
Find it funny how he says, Frank, I was fucking raped in front of those two women, and they have no reaction to it whatsoever.
And then Frank's just like, whatever, you made love to a man. Oh my God. Oh, what a fucking incredible movie. Okay, I still have to give us a wrap up.